Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Saving money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Previously on Patient Zero.
Muscle aches, crushing, throbbing headaches, giant bullseye rash.
I'm not an entomologist. I knew nothing about ticks. And it started as an investigation of children with arthritis.
Is that the tick right there?
Yep, the big nasty looking thing, yeah.
Wow.
So this is Amblyomma varium that I'm showing you right now. The female, she's about the size of maybe like a green grape.
This is Colleen Evans, who until recently was the figurative crypt keeper for one of the world's strangest zoological attractions, one composed entirely of dead parasites.
Yeah, so I am Colleen Evans. I am the collections manager for the U.S. National Tick Collection.
And right now, she's talking to lucky college student Mary Montgomery, who we hired to tour the collection with a microphone.
But she would have been about the same size as the male when she started feeding. He's about the size of like a pencil.
She's showing her a big, fat bloodsucker, a species of tick that feeds exclusively on Central American sloths.
Any animal really you could think of, there's probably a tick that feeds on it.
Mammals, sure, that you probably knew. But did you know ticks feed on birds?
Ticks from penguins and puffins, all kinds of animals.
They feed on reptiles. There's even a species that has evolved to survive underwater by feeding on sea snakes.
And what they do is they actually go inside of the sea snake's ears.
There are ticks on every continent in the world, including Antarctica. And they have achieved this awesome feat by virtue of being hard to detect and hard to remove from the animals upon which they feed.
This one is my particular favorite. This is Cosmiomma hippopotamensis. So again, it's very pretty. It's got a lot of ornamentation, so they're very gold. But also, they feed specifically on hippopotamus, but very specifically inside their anal canal. So they feed inside hippopotamus butts. And it's one of those things that I have no idea who figured that out.
The scientific name for ticks is Acari, like Atari with a C instead of a T. They're not technically insects, but like spiders and mites, they hail from the arachnid family. And usually, green grapes aside, they're tiny. Acari comes from the Greek. Roughly, it means a small thing. Which reminds me of a quote from Lord of the Rings.
It is a strange fate that we should suffer so much fear and doubt over so small a thing.
In spite of the name, from an epidemiological perspective, ticks are hardly small. They're one of the most efficient carriers of disease on the planet. They're Trojan horses, miniature warships in disguise, sailing on the bodies of animals everywhere and transporting an army of pathogens inside their bellies.
The way the ticks are stored is in jars and then in vials. And any vial can have anywhere from one to thousands of ticks in it, depending. You can see
this collection, hardly more than a single carpeted room cramped with head-high filing cabinets, has at least 1 million of these little bastards, the oldest of which were collected more than 100 years ago.
So we have some ticks collected during the Smithsonian Roosevelt safaris in the early 1900s. So of course Theodore Roosevelt is very famous.
But the tick we're primarily concerned with isn't unusually big or beautiful. It doesn't hide inside the ears of snakes or other more exotic places. It was not collected by a former U.S. president. It's a generalist, happy to feed on any number of small to medium-sized mammals or birds. A humble arthropod, just bigger than a poppy seed. A small thing.
This one is Ixodes scapularis, so that is the deer tick. That's the one that is associated with Lyme disease.
I'm Taylor Quimby. Do you remember the name of the bacteria that causes Lyme disease? It's okay if you don't. It's a weird name. Borrelia burgdorferi. Say it with me. Borrelia burgdorferi. I get it. Lyme disease is confusing. And a lot of that confusion is because nobody has ever taken the time to explain the basic biology of the disease. So today we're taking a break from the history and controversy surrounding Lyme disease. We're going to shrink your butt down like Miss Frizzle and take you on a magic school bus podcast ride inside your body and inside the body of a deer tick, which from here on out we will be calling by a more accurate name, the black-legged tick. What is Lyme disease? How does it get in you? And what does it do once it's there? This is the part that we know before we get to the parts that we don't. This is Patient Zero.
There was just so much to learn. I could never get bored of them.
This is Dr. Monica Gulia-Nuss, assistant professor of molecular biology at the University of Nevada, Reno, a woman who has spent much of her career studying mosquitoes and ticks.
People call me a bug lady. So that's
they're both gross. So I mean,
well, I don't think so. I think they're beautiful.
The humble black-legged tick. There's a lot about these parasites that we're going to save for a future episode. The way they get around, what they eat, how they get Lyme disease themselves, all great questions, but ones we're putting aside for the time being. Instead, we're going to focus on the head.
Ticks don't have a head. That's a common misconception. Ticks are kind of like this weird sack of body parts.
Most of their body is really consist on a gut.
Unlike insects, which you may remember have three body parts, the thorax, abdomen, and head, the black-legged tick has a tear-shaped body and a thing on top. It's not a face. It has no eyes. It's totally blind. Scientists often call it by a very gross, very memorable name, the mouth parts. These are the bits that work their way into your skin. On the outside are the palps, which, as the name suggests, are used to feel around for a good spot to bite. In between them are two sawed blades that rub themselves into the skin and then flex backwards, which pulls the most important part, a spiky sort of tube, into your body. The tube has backwards-facing barbs, sort of like a harpoon, so that it's really hard to pull it out. And once it's embedded inside the skin, the tick can start secreting special chemicals through it, like a straw, and spitting out all sorts of stuff to help prepare its meal.
Ticks, in that first 24 hours, they are not usually actively feeding. They're doing things like injecting you with antihistamines.
Antihistamines, so you don't get a big welt, which might tip you off to the fact that you've got a tick on you.
And anticoagulants.
Anticoagulants, so your blood doesn't clot.
They locally immunosuppress you. They have cementing agents.
Cementing agents, to literally bond the tick's mouth parts to your body.
So they're doing all this other stuff in order to make sure that you don't notice you've been bit.
Ticks have so many superpowers in this moment that we're actually utilizing them to make better drugs for humans. There are anticoagulants on the market, synthetic blood thinners, derived from similar compounds excreted by leeches and ticks. Anyway, once they're done doing all of this, numbing you, gluing to you, medicating you, prepping their meal, then, after a good day or more, they start to drink in earnest.
At the same time as they're taking blood, they're also secreting this saliva into our bloodstream.
Secreting saliva. Aside from being gross to most people, this is maybe the most important thing that's happening. Because if a tick were only drinking blood, then it wouldn't be so good at spreading disease. It's the spit that the Lyme pathogen uses to travel into your body. Do you remember what it's called?
Borrelia burgdorferi.
Nice. Now, I've got some good news and some bad news. First, the good news. You won't contract Lyme disease the second a tick burrows into your skin. Some refer to this as the 24 to 48 hour rule. Now, why would that be? Do you remember where Willy Burgdorfer found the Lyme disease spirochete?
So he provided me with some of the intestines of these ticks.
Inside one of the tick's organs, the midgut. That's where Lyme disease is hiding, waiting for just the right moment to begin multiplying.
Replication means you're using resources.
This is Sam Telford, a medical entomologist and longtime Lyme researcher. And what he's saying is that for a bacteria to grow and multiply and move, it's gonna need some energy, food. And that food comes from the host. The tick feeds on you, but Lyme feeds on the tick.
That's not good for your host. You're using their fat reserves, which means that they're less fit. They won't, you know, that's a negative selection pressure. So what really is happening is that the bacteria goes dormant.
Translation: if the Lyme bacteria grew willy-nilly all the time, it would harm its gracious eight-legged hosts, the ticks. Kill them even. And then the bacteria would never spread somewhere new. It would be the end of the line. So instead, the bacteria goes to sleep, nestled in the tick's midgut, like a sci-fi film astronaut cryogenic deep freeze chamber, traveling to new worlds and new frontiers on autopilot. But once the tick thrusts its mouth parts into your skin, the temperature goes way up, a sign that the bacteria, the astronaut, has arrived at its desired location.
The change in temperature from ambient to your skin, that temperature differential is a signal for the bacteria and the other pathogens transmitted by the ticks to wake up.
After the tick has done all the work to prep its meal, it starts drinking blood. That gives the bacteria a food source too, so it can multiply without hurting the tick. And it starts traveling from the midgut up to the tick's salivary glands, where eventually it can get spit out into a new host. Again, this process takes time. Thus, the 24 to 48 hour rule.
And so it's not just this fantasy that, you know, with 24 to 48 hours because we say it is. Empirically, there are studies because some poor graduate student had to sit up all night and pull ticks off every 12 or 6 hours and see whether the animal became infected.
If you can't tell by his tone, Sam Telford knows that this subject, like nearly all of them in Lyme World, is a little bit controversial. And that's because, if you're hanging out in Lyme World, there is a different narrative. Anecdotal stories about people who get bit for just a few hours, but still get Lyme disease. So what's the story here? Why the discrepancies? For starters, even the experts will acknowledge that the 24 to 48 hour rule is more like a guideline than a law of gravity. Ticks do not operate like clockwork, and you could get Lyme after only 23 hours of feeding. It's just less likely. And there is another explanation that I find especially interesting. Some ticks may have started feeding on an animal, kick-started the replication of Lyme disease, only to fall off the host, find a new one, and bite again. These are referred to as pre-fed ticks. Sound unlikely? Maybe. But when I was in Lyme, Connecticut, knocking on doors along Joshua Town Road, where the first few cases of Lyme disease were reported in the 1970s, I couldn't help but notice that nearly all of the people I met there had dogs.
Help, no, me. Sorry,
at this junction, I didn't know if they do or something.
So what happens if a tick, infected with Lyme disease, bites your dog, then gets knocked off onto the carpet or bed, only to climb up your leg and dig in? Evidence shows that if that happens, transmission time can be much lower. One study on mice found 83% of pre-fed ticks gave their host Lyme disease in less than 24 hours. The messiness of the real world is hard to recreate in the lab. If you get a tick off you quickly, it is very unlikely you'll get Lyme disease. But can we say 100% for sure that you won't? I would humbly say no, because nothing in science is 100%. And this is where I'll tell you the bad news. Remember, good news and bad news? The bad news is that there's one more, frankly, much more plausible explanation for why people think they get Lyme after just a few hours. Ticks are small. And some of these reports probably come from people who were bitten by two of them, maybe even weeks apart, but only noticed the second bite. You can't pull off a tick if you don't know it's there.
I live by routines, but I especially love my same-day delivery routine with Shipt. And my shopper knows this about me. When Sunday rolls around and I place my weekly stock-up order, Joe sends texts from the aisles. Wilted lettuce? Nuh-uh. Hard pass. Deal on my favorite sparkling water? Whew. Grab two. Fresh flowers just because? Sounds like a delightful idea. If you love routines that work for you, get Shipt same-day delivery. Shipt. Delight in every delivery. Learn more at Shipt.com/hi.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit Spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Remember the magic school bus? In the third episode, Ralphie, the one who wears a green shirt with an R on it for some reason, gets a fever. So radical elementary school teacher Miss Frizzle shrinks the titular magic school bus and takes the class on a tour of the human body.
I thought blood was red. That stuff is clear.
That's right, Ralphie.
The reason I'm talking about this absolute classic is because I'm about to rip it off wholesale. So let's zoom in and figure out what happens once the pathogen that causes Lyme enters your body. The tick is crawling, undetected. It finds a good spot inside the moist, warm cave of a human armpit. It cuts its way into the skin and pulls its mouth parts into place and starts swapping fluids with you, the host. And along for the ride are a bunch of corkscrew-shaped bacteria, spirochetes, the agent of Lyme disease.
Borrelia burgdorferi.
Well, the most important thing is just a single cell. It's a very simple organism.
You may remember the dulcet tones of microbiologist Alan Barber here. He'll be our guide on this fantastic voyage.
But what it looks like is like a snake on the ground. And it has this kind of these little motors that have sort of hair-like projections coming out of the cell, and like an outboard motor, you know, that's rotating, and that gives the motion to the bacteria.
Remember those little motors. They're going to be important later on. But zoom in even further, and you'll notice that the skin of the spirochete, so to speak, is very textured. In fact, it almost looks like it's covered in weird little
spikes. Or I think I would say it's more like a forest with sort of the trees, the canopy on top.
These are outer surface proteins. Why do you care about them? Because they stimulate your immune system. Your body makes immune cells that respond to the specific shape of that little canopy of trees. You can get Lyme disease more than once because different strains of Borrelia have different arrangements of spikes, so your body doesn't immediately recognize it if you get it again. These proteins are the key component of the Lyme disease vaccine, called Lymerix, that was commercially available in the late 90s. And they're the key component of the Lyme vaccine you can still get today for your dog.
This is a very ancient form of responding to pathogens that, you know, we share with fruit flies and worms and things like that.
In Lyme disease, the immune system is, well, it's sort of everything. It's the system that will hopefully fight off the infection, but it's also what triggers your symptoms. The flood of stuff that sweeps in to fight off an illness, white blood cells, immune cells, little chemical messengers that call for backup, all of it brings inflammation.
A lot of the symptoms I think that people experience, some of the signs of disease are from the inflammation itself, and not so much because the bacterium is producing a poison or a toxin or anything like that.
Inflammation is even the mechanism that makes the characteristic bullseye rash of Lyme disease. In order to make way for all your immune cells, blood vessels in your body dilate. They get bigger, which means more blood is flowing through them, and on the outside, it can make your skin look red. But strangely, the center of the bullseye is where you'd be least likely to find the bacteria, because it's using those little outboard motors, motoring away from the tick, setting off the alarms as it goes, and making a break for it.
The best place to find the bacteria at that point would be just beyond that leading edge.
In other words, it's a race. A race between your immune response and the bacteria, which is trying to run and hide. Okay, let's zoom back out. This part of the infection is called early Lyme. At this point, it's still pretty much contained to the skin, around or at least close to where the tick bit you. Around the same time as the rash, patients might start feeling some other symptoms, also caused by the alarm system that's signaling the rest of the immune troops in the body. This would be fatigue, mild fever, a headache, all pretty much standard stuff. But sometimes, it is literally just the rash. And here, I want to bring in our first case study from a listener who sent us this message. Her story is what I'll call the best case scenario.
I was diagnosed with Lyme's when I was 18 years old, and I was sharing a bed with an outdoor cat, and I found a tick in my armpit one day, and 2 days later, the typical bullseye rash appeared, and I had been just doing a report on Lyme's disease for my health class in 12th grade, so I knew exactly what it was, and I went to the doctor that day, got treatment, antibiotics for a month, and I was fine from then on.
Here's some good news. For many, if not most, of the 300,000-plus cases every year, this is pretty much the whole story. Lyme disease is caught fairly quickly and is treated without any serious lasting issues. Which is not to diminish the seriousness of the horror stories, which can understandably freak people out. It's just important to know that they are generally a minority of overall cases. So, in this best-case scenario, what happens next? The doctor orders a round of antibiotics. Probably doxycycline, a drug that instead of killing the bacteria, sabotages its production and stops it from multiplying, which gives the patient's body time to build immune cells that specialize in hunting down the specific shape of those outer surface proteins we were talking about and gobble up the bacteria. And in a best-case scenario, that's exactly what happens. A couple days after taking antibiotics, the rash clears, the symptoms vanish, and all the patient has to deal with are the potential side effects from doxycycline. Sun sensitivity, difficulty swallowing, constipation, dark pee, stomach cramps, diarrhea, discoloration of teeth. You know, the usual. So how often do cases of Lyme disease resemble this best case scenario? It's very hard to say, and here's why. In the early 2000s, Dr. Alan Steer, the same Dr. Steer who investigated the initial reports in Connecticut, published a study on the approximate number of people with Lyme disease who get a rash. And the answer is somewhere between 70 and 80%. But of those, only 20 to 30% really get that textbook bullseye look. Rashes could be oblong or red throughout or splotchy on the edges or a little bluish in the middle. In his paper, Steer acknowledged that the thousands who never get a rash, or whose rashes aren't easily identified, may not go to a physician. And quote, Lyme disease may not be recognized until the more debilitating, harder to treat late manifestations become apparent. If you're one of those thousands who don't get diagnosed, that little bacteria with its little outboard motors can outrun your immune response. It wins the race. It can lodge itself in your joints, in your brain, in your heart, and start to do some real damage. The rash is the most obvious sign of Lyme disease, but the problem with an obvious sign is that it can make you complacent, make it so you don't pay attention to the subtle signs that are harder to see. And that, in turn, can mean that there are a whole lot of patients that fall to the wayside.
So people who came into the office with an expanding red rash were the ones who enrolled in the research studies throughout the 80s and 90s, and even today.
This is Brian Fallon, director of the Lyme and Tick-Borne Diseases Research Center at Columbia University.
And the reason is because there was no gold standard diagnostic test for early Lyme disease. So they had to rely on people who presented with a rash. That means that people who presented with viral-like or flu-like symptoms, who didn't recall or see the rash, they were not being studied. It means that people who complained of severe fatigue and cognitive problems that started after a tick bite, they were not being studied.
Today, we know lots more about what happens when Lyme disease isn't a best-case scenario, when the symptoms aren't caught early. But we don't know everything, and Lyme World thrives on ambiguity.
One of the problems with the internet is that there's so much information out there, it's very hard for patients to know what's real and what isn't real.
It's hard for reporters, I'll tell you too.
Yeah, and it's hard for me too.
On the next episode, worst case scenarios.
I couldn't open my right eye and the right side of my face was totally paralyzed.
And we put the Lyme disease tests under the microscope.
If you had an alternative point of view, you could accurately say that Lyme testing and early Lyme disease is worthless. It's 50-50. That's a truthful statement. But it's not designed for that.
That's next time on Patient Zero. Patient Zero is produced and reported by me, Taylor Quimby. Projects like this one take time and resources. If you like what you hear, consider making a $20 donation at patientzeropodcast.org. You'll get early access to future episodes, ad-free, and some bonus episodes as well. Editing help for this episode came from Annie Ropeek, Jason Moon, Corey Princell, Justine Paradise, Jimmy Gutierrez, Nick Capodice, Jackie Helbert, and Todd Bookman. Sam Evans-Brown is Patient Zero's senior producer. Erica Janik is executive producer. Fact-checking for this episode by Amy Tardiff. Graphics by Sarah Plourd. Maureen McMurray is director of content. Special thanks to members of NHPR's creative production unit who are willing to whisper Latin into a microphone. Thanks also to the listeners who sent in their Lyme stories. You'll be hearing a lot more next week, so stay tuned. If you've got questions, concerns, or comments about Patient Zero, we want to hear from you. Email us at patientzero@nhpr.org. Patient Zero's theme was composed and performed by Ty Gibbons. Additional music from Jason Moon, Blue Dot Sessions, and Poddington Bear. Credit music by Deerhoof. Patient Zero is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. It is a strange fate that we should suffer so much fear and doubt over so small a thing. Yeah.
Such a little thing.
Boromir!
Give the ring to Frodo.
Classic.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is here. It's Way Day. Right now, you can score up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar cards, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. All up to 80% off right now. Plus, everything ships free. And flash deals are launching all Way Day long. Don't miss Wayfair's biggest sale of the year. Shop Way Day right now from May 6th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.